Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is our 53rd episode. We got some travel coming up this month. We have like 3 trips, 2 of them back to back.
Yeah, we are traveling this Friday, so 4 days from now. We're going to Anaheim for the Fit Expo. The weekend after that, we will be in Dallas for the Dallas Europa. And then 2 weeks after that, we will be back in Anaheim for the Idea Expo, which is an expo specifically for fitness professionals.
Where is it?
Anaheim.
Anaheim. Yeah, I'm just finding this out today. That's how much, like, it's like the blind leading the blind with us. You would think because we eat, live, and breathe the same air and do the same things, like, we know what's going on. But, yeah, no, we got it together, I promise.
we're totally fitness professionals, guys. Don't you worry. But, yeah, so it should be a lot of fun. The Anaheim Fit Expo and the Idea Expo, they're actually in the same convention hall 3 weeks apart. But I haven't booked the Idea Expo yet, the flight. So I'm thinking maybe we tack on an extra day and do a Disney day, maybe. What you think?
Yeah, maybe this time. What's that ride with the water?
Splash Mountain.
Yeah, this time we can go when it's actually warm and sunny.
Yeah, that would be nice. We go to Disney the one day that it's like miserable and cold.
And of course, we went on the water ride because why wouldn't we have? Right at the end of the day.
Yeah, but the Vegan Strong Tour is kicked off, fully in season, crazy month coming up. And yeah, we really hope that we get to see some of you guys out there, because that's our favorite part of traveling, is actually getting to meet you. And when people come up to us and say, oh, we listen to your podcast and we really get a lot out of it, like, that really makes everything worthwhile. So yeah, if you guys can come out, come on out. So yeah, I just wanted to ask real quick, if you guys are enjoying this podcast and if you look forward to it coming out, if you wouldn't mind leaving us an iTunes review or just a rating, it really does help more people to see our podcast and hopefully click it, listen to it, and learn about veganism and building muscle and strength with a vegan lifestyle. We would really appreciate it, guys. Before we get into it, I apologize for any background noise. It is Memorial Day weekend, and we have not left the house, not even once. So when we knew we had to sit down to record this podcast, I said, Giacomo, can we record outside? And now that we're outside, I realize there's a lot of background noise. So sorry, guys. Hope you can still hear us all right. Hopefully the birds chirping is, like, therapeutic. But the motorcycle's going by. Probably not so much.
I don't know. This sunshine and warmth on my skin feels kind of weird. I think I'm gonna go back inside into my hole.
Yeah, so this podcast episode is a little bit unique because it's actually a YouTube video that we put out last month, and it was such a good quality discussion. And unfortunately, I feel like, even though I wanted it to be a YouTube video, I feel like maybe it was a wee bit long for a YouTube audience, where, you know, YouTube is very fast and in your face, and this was like a pretty in-depth discussion, but I thought maybe podcast listeners would be able to get a lot more out of it. So if you are not a subscriber to our YouTube channel, which I totally recommend, because we have a lot of really high quality, fast takeaways and high protein recipes on there. But if you are not a subscriber to the YouTube channel, then you can still hear this really, really good quality discussion here. And if you did watch the YouTube channel, you're the real MVP. So thank you guys for that.
And what we're digging right into basically is how veganism continues to explode, and it's no longer becoming this vegan bubble that we've come to know and love and appreciate so much. And with everything going into the mainstream right now in regards to the food supply being affected specifically by way of vegan burgers, like, who knew? Who knew? Out of all the foods, vegan burgers are the ones that are taking over the world. But with that, you know, I think the discussion that we're bringing to the surface is that our pure ethics, while we don't compromise them for ourselves personally, ultimately the goal is for the world to consume fewer animals, to eventually shut down factory farms and all the likes. And sometimes to make that happen, we do have to compromise our ethics somewhat, and we do have to bend the way that we view things and the way that we approach our activism efforts. And we're going to dig right into that and talk about our thoughts more in detail on this episode. I mean, this is one of those conversations that I think we talk about at the dinner table, behind closed doors, amongst ourselves, but I don't know that we feel as a community that we're ready for it on the surface as a whole. But Danny and I feel differently. We really want to bring this conversation to the surface and get people talking.
Yeah, so sometimes you have to lose the battle to win the war, basically. Speaking of Game of Thrones, anybody? Anybody catch the Game of Thrones finale? Anyone feel like it was a little bit mediocre and kind of disappointing? No? Just me? Okay. Moving on. So this episode is featuring Robert Cheek. So this was actually recorded when Robert Cheek was in town for the Worcester Veg Fest. And we always have the best discussions when the three of us are together. And I just said, hey, let's throw the camera on for this one. So that's exactly what we did. I hope you guys enjoy this discussion. And we will be back after the discussion with the Q&A section. Hey guys, welcome back to the channel. Today I have both Giacomo, whom you well know, and Robert Cheek, who you may very well know. This is the godfather of vegan bodybuilding, in my opinion. How long have you been vegan?
23 and a half years.
Yeah, and he created veganbodybuilding.com, godfather of vegan bodybuilding. But what we're talking about today is a story that I've just randomly threw up on my Instagram yesterday about Impossible Food and Just Foods, which used to be Hampton Creek, and like how maybe they're not actually vegan companies, but they're doing a lot of good for the movement. And since we have Robert in town for the Worcester Veg Fest, the New England Veg Fest, which is tomorrow, and we have 23, 17, that's 40, 55 years of combined veganism among us, we should talk about it.
Chris Cooney from Vegan Zombie was at Expo West, big industry show for natural food products. I've been 10 out of the last 12 years. It's massive, 80,000 people from 80 countries. It's where every company you can imagine displays their new products. If you're Tom's of Maine, or if you're Safeway, or if you're the smallest vegan company that can afford to be there, you're there. And so it's where Daya releases their brand new products. It's where Vega releases brand new products. And so Impossible Foods was there serving up their products, some of their new things perhaps. And it was revealed through Chris Cooney's video that they were serving some dairy-based cheese mixed in with their Impossible meat.
And they lied about it and said that it was vegan when it wasn't vegan. He caught it on camera. Three people just lied to him about it.
And I watched those videos too. Mm-hmm. And that could be, because I've worked at these booths, sometimes with large numbers of staff. And sometimes people just get the wrong information, say the wrong thing. I mean, I even had that happen to me working with Vega. One of my friends with Vega, who was brand new to the company, said something to somebody else. And as it turns out, the person she was talking to was the CEO of a competitor company. She didn't know that. And she was making claims about other companies that maybe were a little bit of a stretch or weren't mm-hmm. super accurate because she was so enthusiastic about Vega. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, that's my company. She's like, oh, oops. And we actually had this for weeks, internal email and you know, all this stuff going back and forth with Vega and that other company. So anyway, I just want to put that out there that sometimes people just get a little bit flustered and they do say the wrong thing or they're misinformed. Mm-hmm. So that could have been the case. I don't know that.
I don't think it was, just because the woman who was there was like a direct employee, kind of a higher up of Impossible Foods. I know there's usually volunteers at these booths at certain events, and I think that's what you run into. People just don't know. But I think this person did know, and they chose to lie about it, and then they chose to be very, very corporate in their like non-apology.
Well, and I think it's because they are kind of corporate. I mean, so I just learned more about Impossible Foods. I've been aware of them for quite some time, but listened to a podcast on Freakonomics, interviewed Pat Brown, the founder, who's a professor at Stanford, longtime vegan. They've raised $400 million. Like they're becoming more corporate. And I think that sometimes can change a little bit. You start out small with a certain vision, and sometimes that, as it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, you realize more opportunities to do good, but you do become corporate without even trying to. We experienced that with Vega, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I started when it was just like Brendan was designing or doing the final touches of the first Vega bar ever on my mom's computer when he was visiting me in 2005 when we were filming a documentary, mm-hmm. the Vegan Fitness Built Naturally project. So it was a very quaint, things were run out of Charles's garage, you know, it was very small. They got bigger and bigger and bigger, where even I didn't feel as comfortable anymore. It was too corporate for me mm-hmm. towards the end of my time with the company.
Yeah.
And it didn't start off that way, but it moved that way. And so sometimes I think these companies will have more of a, they're like that family-friendly approach at first. They're in the community, they go to all the vegan festivals and stuff, and then they're too big for that stuff, mm-hmm. and they don't need that anymore.
And I think that's kind of what we were talking about, is some of these companies, they get really, really big, they get really, really mainstream, but they're no longer vegan companies. Like, they're not 100% vegan companies. So Just, which was Hampton Creek, had a party this week, and they served their Just Egg, which is like this revolutionary vegan product. They served it wrapped in bacon, like meat bacon. And, you know, they're taking some hits from the vegan community for that. And obviously they are not a vegan company, but they are capitalizing off of veganism. And as like longtime vegans, there can be some weird feelings about that, I think, because vegan is such it's a word that we really, really take to heart in many ways. But at the end of the day, Impossible Foods and Just are going to do more to turn people on to plant-based eating than probably we ever will. And ultimately, wouldn't that be a good thing?
We love teaching just as much as we love writing customized programs for vegans who are into fitness. With our vegan fat loss course, you get the benefit of both. Not only do you get custom macros and also a workout plan, we explain the whys and hows of fat loss throughout our entire self-guided 12-week course. You'll receive exclusive access to our VIP area on veganproteins.com, where you'll have access to our private menu planner and other tools. With a combination of self-guided curriculum and access to our private coaching community, you'll be set up for success from the moment you sign up. If your goal is to learn all about how to efficiently lose fat on a vegan diet and apply it to your lifestyle, then this is the course for you. If you're interested in learning more about and signing up for our 12-week vegan fat loss course, you can visit veganproteins.com or use the link in our show notes. Or you can submit a coaching inquiry by hitting the coaching tab on veganproteins.com. Reach out anytime, as we always look forward to hearing from you.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is, you know, let's say that the corporate PR apology would have been more vegan-centric. Would that have even potentially been responsible to the mainstream audience that they could potentially benefit from having more plant-based foods as far as their meals were concerned? I mean, I think, like, just going back 5, 6, 7, 8 years, at least for the three of us, I think we've all spoken about this many times over, how, you know, the movement is bigger than us, and it's bigger than just being vegan or not being vegan. And to create change, like, yeah, the utopia, the vegan utopia bubble is all well and good and everything, but how are we going to create change on a global scale if we're not willing to accept the fact that the world isn't going to go vegan without there being more supply and demand for plant-based food choice and people starting to make switches? But then, I guess the issue is, does that dilute veganism?
Well, I think there's a couple things going on. One, I'm surprised about this Just news, because from what I understand, it was founded by animal rights people in the longtime animal rights community members, people who speak in animal rights movements.
People like bought parts of it.
Exactly. Perhaps there's too much investment in from outside, just like Tyson has invested into Beyond Meat, and that's inherently going to influence some of their decisions that they make, because they're financially invested, whereas vegans are paying $8 at a time for how many people, whereas Tyson said, here's $10 million, go to work, or $30 million, or whatever the case is. So I think there's a few things going on. One, and we talked about this when I got into town late last night, one of the things is, and I don't want to speak for these companies, and I don't want to make it sound insensitive, okay? But I'm going to say it. You just said, we're in a different world than we were 6, 7 years ago. I honestly don't think those big companies, even founded by vegans, care much about vegans anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why. If you look at their statistics, Ethan Brown, the founder and CEO of Beyond Meat, said in an interview recently, 93% of their customers are non-vegan, non-vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And that's who they're going after. I'm just, you know, putting this out there. Vegans can complain all they want and say, you know, we supported you from the beginning, you turned your back on us, or whatever, but and I'm speaking in terms of either Just or Impossible at this point, not Beyond Meat, but they don't care anymore, right? Because they don't need you. Mm-hmm. It's not for you. Their products are not for vegans. They happen to be plant-based, but they're not designed, I mean, for vegans. There's a million companies that have been around for decades, like Tofurky and Light Life and Eve's and all that were maybe founded or designed, you know, to be a meat analog product for vegans. But now, like you started off with, Danny, the bigger picture and the money and the direction that people are moving in is plant-based, even if you're Cargill, even if you're Tyson, you have to recognize that. And so we can make as many videos as we want, criticizing or calling out or questioning some of the ethics of these companies, and they just don't care. And you know how I know? Because I worked for one of those companies. And, you know, once Vega got big enough, sure, vegans helped in the beginning, and we were so grateful for that. We were absolutely grateful for that, including you guys at veganproteins.com supporting us. But once we got big enough, it didn't matter anymore because we were in Costco and Target and CVS and Walgreens, and we had to serve those customers.
Right.
And that's what I think is probably going on here. Where they're going to take a little bit of heat for a few weeks and a bunch of negative reviews, and I'm going to move over to Beyond Meat now, or I'm going to move to this company. I don't think it puts a dent in there.
Right. If a bunch of vegans are upset about these choices, which, you know, people are, and I understand that completely, but at the end of the day, like, it's meat eaters that are the ones that we actually should be targeting, non-vegans. Like, veganism shouldn't be this super exclusive club. We shouldn't want it to be this super exclusive club. We should want it to be super, super approachable, affordable, easy to find, accessible. Like, that's what should be the goal, even though it kind of feels sometimes like it's this weird compromise on your own ethics to, you know, buy something that, you know, Tyson has invested a lot of money into, because you know that if the climate of food changes back towards more animal-based food situation, Tyson will drop plant-based food like that, because it was never about plant-based food. It was about making money.
Yeah.
So it's hard to justify that within yourself to support that. But at the end of the day, it can only be good for the whole movement.
Yeah, I mean, it's an entry point for people to eventually go vegan, and how could we not keep that door open, and how could we be judgmental to a fault as a community where we're just going to rally up our own and we're not going to welcome in others that would potentially want to make this ethical lifestyle decision for themselves? You know, we don't want to have moral superiority around our own personal beliefs. While we believe that on a global scale that this is evolution, this is the future, you know, we realize that these things don't happen overnight, and they took time. It took time for, I mean, it took me 3 years to transition to veganism, for example. You know, I think it just takes time.
And a few people reached out to me and suggested, and I definitely don't want this to go off on like an economics trip or anything like that, but several people suggested that, you know, we live in a capitalist society here in the United States, and as long as capitalism is the way we function, veganism in its truest sense of like not exploiting animals will never actually be 100% of a thing, because at the end of the day, within capitalism, like someone somewhere is being exploited.
Sure, that's fundamental. That has to be the case. But I think what we're trying to do is do the most good. And you said something I've been saying for a long time in your other video, that some of these companies, even one single company or one single decision, could do more to save animals than you could in your entire, you know, in your entire life. And I've been saying that for a long time too, that a number of companies do more to change the way people live and eat and view animals than many, many animal rights organizations combine. Now, that's nothing negative to save animal rights organizations, that their methods aren't effective. It's just that there is something that we do 6 to 8 times a day, typically, for most people, and that's eat, that's consume. That's breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack, dessert. That's 6 right there.
Mm-hmm.
And for most people, those are animals they're consuming every single meal for 6 to 8 times a day. And if food is the way to impact that or influence that, then companies like Impossible Foods and Just and Beyond Meat are doing, and Vega, to a major extent, are doing work that it is so effective for the end result of consuming fewer animals or exploiting fewer animals or raising and harvesting and slaughtering, you know, fewer animals. They're making a big impact. You know,
I knew that was coming. They walk across the table and talk to you.
So I think that's the end game for why these companies started.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they may have changed their path a little bit or course corrected, or gone on a different road, but I think that's still the goal they aim for, and I don't expect that they can be perfect. I don't think it excuses. I mean, some of these, the justifications they use in like that Chris Cooney video, Vegan Zombie, when he's on the phone with them, at Impossible Foods that, well, we don't really cater to vegans anyway. Like, we cater, you know, we're our audience is non-vegans, and so what's the big deal if there's cheese in the, you know, in the meat? But because it is a plant-based company, or founded as such, or claims to be, that confuses a section of their audience.
If you're going to scream from the mountaintops, we've come up with this amazing, incredible plant-based product, from a logical standpoint, it just doesn't make sense why you would mix it with an animal-based food.
Well, and then the allergy thing is the biggest, really. I mean,
but that's the most dangerous.
The ethical thing is interesting. But the allergy thing is, yeah, that's a danger or a liability or a risk waiting to, you know,
for sure,
explode.
But I mean, I guess in one sense I see what they're trying to do. Like, they're trying to get it into the food supply, so they want to make it. They want to show that it's, no matter what you add to it, whether you put, you know, cheese on top of Beyond Burger or TJ Fridays, like. I don't really know where I'm going with this, but it's just, it is weird. It is definitely weird. Like, to us, it doesn't make any sense logically, but I'm trying to understand how that makes sense to a broader market logically, to, like, mix plant-based meats with, say, you know, non-plant-based cheese, for example.
If you're not vegan or vegetarian or anything like that, maybe it's just so you know, take a bite of something and you're like, wow, this is really delicious. But, I mean, I feel like, if they believe in the product as much as they do, and we've had it is delicious, I just don't think it's necessary. Mm. But, you know,
I think the most reasonable explanation that I can come up with is that when we're promoting anything, marketing anything, we try to find our audience, mm-hmm. right? Let's be honest. Like, we promote vegan coaching, or I have my vegan fitness books or whatever. I'm trying to find my audience. You're trying to find your audience. Mm-hmm. If these numbers are true that they provide, some of these companies, that 93%, 90%, 88% of their audience is actually non-vegan, then in a way, they're doing what makes the most logical sense for their marketing.
Yeah, yes and no, because, and I think this is the first time I'm thinking of this, we've talked about this, like, you could have 100,000 followers that don't do anything for you, really. They don't buy your products, they don't listen to your content, whatever.
Tell other people,
but
if you have
10 people that genuinely, they support everything you do, well, vegans are those 10 people to these companies.
Yeah, especially in the early stages.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, just to me, it's like biting the hand that feeds you.
Well, and another, this is a way different topic, I think, and I don't know, I really want to go there, mm-hmm. but that's exactly what's going on with the ex-vegan movement. Mm-hmm. So many of these vegan athletes or many celebrities or YouTubers or influencers or Instagrammers, or I don't really personally like any of those. I think I'm just a little old school, like all of us are here, where it's hard to sometimes digest that. But a lot of these people made their living, their entire career, their name, their reputation on veganism or being veganism or being vegan and using veganism to elevate themselves and then left.
They're cashing in. They're cashing in, but not on, it's not just on a word. Like, a lot of people cashed in on the gluten-free movement, right? Like, when gluten-free was absolutely enormous, but gluten-free isn't someone's code of ethics, you know?
Yeah.
So it strikes a different chord. So
sure.
People are cashing in. It would be like me trying to cash in on Buddhism. You know, I'm not Buddhist. I like Buddhism, but I'm not Buddhist. But if I cashed in somehow on that religion, made a business on that religion and had nothing to do with that religion, like,
sure,
those people probably wouldn't be very happy with me. And I
sure.
think with a company, we can kind of forgive a little bit because they're a company. They're a business.
Many moving parts, many people, many personalities.
Yeah. When it's one person, it's a lot easier to be like, you suck.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, you turned your back on everyone who made you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
So, I mean, and I don't want to come across as maybe I am, you know, defending these companies' actions. I'm trying to rationalize it and explain,
right.
Because I've been with these companies. I've worked with some of these big companies, and we've made major mistakes when I've been with these companies that really upset the vegan audience, including myself,
mm-hmm.
as part of that vegan audience. Like,
right.
What are we thinking?
Yeah.
And people just dropped the ball, or they weren't thinking of that negative outcome or that net result when certain decisions were made, exploiting animals from a brand that had a plant-based or vegan reputation. And so that's the only conclusion that I can come up with on the spot, and I just learned of this just issue.
It just happened, like,
yes,
2 days ago.
Yeah, I just heard of it. But that's what I can think, is that most of their customer base is not plant-based, and they're serving those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the only thing I can think
of. And it, like, personally, it pisses me off.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I still think it's overall, like, the company's existence and success overall is such a huge win for the animals. And like we said before, off camera, animals don't give a shit why we stop eating them or using them or exploiting them. They can't.
Yeah, they just care that
all that matters is we do.
Yeah.
Okay, and now let's think of it strictly in terms of business. They're trying to get companies to carry these products. Now, Burger King comes on in and observes this. You think they're going to be more interested in 100% plant-based option, or suddenly they can slap their ingredients on, like their mayo and their cheese and stuff? If you want to cater to these big restaurant chains that are all over the world and other companies, you have to sell them on your product and allow them to introduce it the way they see fit. And then hopefully over time, those companies will make more and more choices geared towards true vegan options, you know?
But look at Beyond Meat. They had a Super Bowl commercial with Carl's Jr. It's amazing. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, we couldn't have even imagined that years
ago. How many years has PETA tried to get a Super Bowl commercial? Every year they've tried to get a Super Bowl commercial.
If it's a real effort, not just publicity. So.
Well, whatever it is, like, it's never going to freaking happen.
Yeah, but so Beyond Meat partners with Carl's Jr., and they came out with that Super Bowl commercial. I didn't see it during the Super Bowl, but I saw it during basketball, like NBA playoffs or something like that later on, which was awesome. And what does that do? Well, that helps Beyond Meat get to a point where they're hitting the IPO, they're going public with a $1.2 billion valuation. And yes, like you said, Giacomo, they're serving their Beyond Burger with like cheese and all these other things at Carl's Jr. But it's a massive step to getting people who walk into Carl's Jr. to choose at least a plant-based meat patty instead of an animal-based meat patty, and that still is a win for all those individuals that patty was made from.
And over time, as those companies realize, hey, more people are buying these plant-based ones, less people are buying these animal-based ones, and I think once these companies realize how monetarily unsustainable animal agriculture is, it's so expensive. Once they realize, like, whoa, we can make a lot of money off this plant-based stuff because production is so much cheaper, money is going to be diverted away from animal agriculture. And I don't know if that's happening yet with the meat industry. It's happening with the dairy industry, and we're seeing it everywhere. Like, dairies are shutting down everywhere. But I think once we start to see that happen to the factory farming meat industries, I think even the vegan community, the hardcore vegan community who's like really angry at these companies, I think everyone will have to be like, well, it's working. It might not have been the route we wanted, but
yeah,
it's working.
One of the most common questions our listeners ask us is where we like to do our research. In this day and age, we're hit in the face by information everywhere we turn. So it's important to be selective about what content you choose to consume with your time to make sure it's time well spent. Our Ace in the Hole is a monthly publication called Mass, or Monthly Application in Strength Sports. Each month, we receive the latest issue of Mass with articles that are specifically curated for strength sport athletes, coaches, and fitness enthusiasts in a consumable, easy-to-digest format. Greg Knuckles, Eric Helms, and Mike Zordos are not only leaders in the industry, they have committed their careers to sifting through thousands of studies and journals on the latest in fitness science to find the most relevant cutting-edge info so you don't have to. If there was only one research source you could spend your time and energy reading to keep up with the evidence-based fitness world, in our opinion, it would be Mass. Learn more about how to subscribe to their monthly digest at bit.ly/VPMass. And that link will also be in the show notes, so should you want to keep on listening and check it out later, you can. If there's only one thing we have learned, it's to never stop learning. Hope you find our secret weapon as useful as we do.
And I think, and I don't want to say this from like, I've been in this position for so long kind of thing, and you're a newer vegan, you don't know. But what I've observed, what I've observed over the last 24 years doing this is that there are a lot of people seemingly in the vegan community who want to keep products small and keep it a little club, and they like buying their little independently owned company.
Fun.
That right, it's fun to support and all that, but those they're not making a huge difference in the world. The little tiny companies, they're not putting a big dent, and they have to get to a point where even if you look at all the plant-based milks right now, all combined, they make up 13% of the market share in the United States. That's still relatively small.
Yeah.
all combined, but it's also, I mean, it probably used to be 1% a few years ago.
Right.
And so it's and that's significant. We're talking 13% of a $3.1 billion plant-based food industry in the U.S., and that's I think just plant-based meats and cheeses and maybe butters or whatever, milks. It's just those things. It's already a $3 or $4 billion industry. So, but it's the companies that are doing that. It's the plant-based milks that are partnering with dairies that are mm-hmm. going that direction and making a bigger splash.
But I guess on the flip side of the coin, you know, in all fairness to the newer vegans that are looking for a sense of community, I don't want to say we were involved in veganism in its infancy stage because it's been around for 50 years, but as it was beginning to explode, we had a pretty tight-knit community. We really did have our own thing with these vegan-specific plant-based products as they were up and coming and they started to become available.
Yeah.
So we sort of got to enjoy that romance
really niche
phase.
Feeling.
Yeah, that really niche feeling. Whereas now, newer vegans are like, yeah, cool, I'm vegan, but it's not, it's just different. It's just a different entry point now for people. So I guess I could understand newer
yeah.
vegans
but
the
I mean,
same.
No one knows that feeling like we do. I mean, we opened Vegan Proteins as the first vegan supplement store in the world, to my knowledge. And it was, I don't want to say it was huge, but within the community, I mean, people knew what Vegan Proteins was. That's where they got their protein. And now you can go to Amazon, you can go to Walmart, you can go to Target, you can go anywhere and find Vegan Protein. Back then, 10 years ago, you just couldn't.
Yeah.
And we ended up having to close our shop doors because like the world just didn't need us anymore to be a vegan supplement store. And it was like super, super bittersweet because obviously we loved that store. It was our baby, but it was such a good sign for the movement at large that like it didn't have to exist. So we're not just like throwing stones at these big companies. Like we've been in it. We've been the little vegan company that gets like crushed out. And it's still, in its own right, it's something to be celebrated.
Well, and that romance feeling of seeing the new vegan product come out, and why we watched all these companies be developed. We watched Beyond Meat start. We watched Miyoko start. We watched Daiya. We watched everybody start.
Mm-hmm.
And it was different. I grew up in my small town in Oregon. I literally would go to the co-op, a real hippie kind of place. That's where I would get my vegan stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually graduated up to move to a bigger city, and I would go to Whole Foods Market because that was like the place to go to get stuff. Now, we don't have to do either of those. And that's, and I don't want the co-op to be hurt. Obviously, they still have their community members, and they still, in fact, that where I came from, the co-op now has multiple locations. It's actually grown because
mm-hmm.
of the popularity of this type of food. They haven't been hurt by it. And Whole Foods has grown, I mean, to the point they got acquired by Amazon. But the fact that we can go over to Market Basket,
yeah.
or to Kroger, or to Winn-Dixie, or to Publix, or Safeway, or anywhere, and still find all these different...
That was not possible 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
I was on a road trip and pulled into a Walmart and found field roast chow vegan cheese,
mm-hmm.
this organic, I don't remember the name now, organic vegan bread, and then like tofurkey or Eve's deli slices and all this, and I made this whole like vegan sandwich, and I made this post online that like, hey, I'm
at Walmart.
I'm at a Walmart parking lot having like co-op type food,
mm-hmm.
and you know who I got initial praise from was Forks Over Knives.
Mm-hmm.
I said thank you for showing that veganism isn't elitist, that you have to go to Whole Foods. I pulled into a Walmart in East LA at midnight to get dinner.
People are always shocked when we tell them we shop at Whole Foods maybe 5% of the time. We only go there for like special treats once in a blue moon. We get everything else now at a basic, non-specialty, super old school grocery store.
You also have one of the worst Whole Foods in the country.
You guys heard it here. It's not just me being salty. It's the truth.
Yeah, if you live next to Venice, Whole Foods on my Rose and Lincoln, you'd be there every day.
It's the worst Whole Foods.
It sucks.
Andover, we're looking at you.
Yeah.
Sorry. But yeah, we can do that now. Whereas when I first went vegan back in 2002, it wasn't even Whole Foods. It used to be called Wild Oats. It hadn't even been bought out yet.
Yeah, Wild Oats.
But I used to skip school, like a good little girl, and drive to Wild Oats to get special vegan food. Yeah, like the idea of going to buy a cookie that was vegan was like such a joy.
Alternative Baking Company. It was
yes,
like the main one.
Yes, that was it. Uncle Eddie's. You remember Uncle Eddie's?
I do.
Yeah, so, but, and that was fun. There was like this romance, like you said, to it. It was just so exciting to discover these new things and discover other vegans. Holy shit. When I met Robert in 2008, at the Boston Veg Fest, he was speaking, and I was like, oh my God, there are vegans that are like, they lift. I had no idea. It was amazing. And now it's like almost, it's almost a joke.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's almost a joke. And people are like, oh, another vegan bodybuilder, wonderful. Like,
yeah, my Uber driver who dropped me off yesterday, he's like, so what do you do? And I'm like, I write books and stuff, and I keep it kind of vague, and just for conversation's sake. And he's like, well, you know, what type? Oh, I'm in the vegan health and fitness space. And he's like, oh, I know vegan bodybuilder, Anthony. And I was like, it took me a second. Then I'm like, oh, yeah. I remember Anthony. He's really, really big dude in Phoenix. And then I'm like, yeah, I haven't seen him in a while. It took me a while to, you know, think of him because he hasn't come to a lot of the events. But like, you know, Will Tucker is right in the area. And he's like, oh, yeah, I know Will.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he lives like right over there. And then we talked about a few other people. And so this is just my random Uber driver, non-vegan, but he happens to know multiple vegan bodybuilders in that city. Yeah, yeah.
And, but there used to be a point where, like, we knew every single vegan who was into bodybuilding.
More or less.
If they had ever used the internet ever, we knew who they were.
Yeah.
And now it's like, we'll turn around sometimes and be like, oh, this person has like 100,000.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I've been a vegan athlete for 24 years, and I'm just now learning of people who have a following 3, 4, 5 times mine on social media, and I never heard of them. But that's exciting to me. It's not like a, you know, something to not be celebrated. It's something to celebrate a lot, where it's like, wow. In whatever city or state or country they're in, they're really making an impact.
But it's just different. And I think the really old school vegans, like, we're really hanging on. A lot of us are just really like, no, veganism has to be, like, this perfect, pristine thing. And, like, it should be. Like, for the sake of the animals, it would be wonderful if it was. But I think we just need to sort of begin to embrace this new era of plant. I wouldn't even call it vegan. It's plant-based eating, and we need to embrace it, because that's how you get them. You get them in Walmart in the middle of the country. You don't get them at Whole Foods and Candle 79. Is that a place?
Yeah, I've been there at New York City.
So. You don't. That's not how you get people to come to veganism or a plant-based lifestyle. You get it by being able to find it in Walmart in the middle of nowhere.
You should, like, put it this way: if the food supply is somewhat messy and it doesn't look as pure as I want it to be, but one day, as a result of so many more plant-based options coming into the food supply, factory farms shut down, I'm going to be way happier than just going to the grocery store and having my, like, vegan product wrapped up into a neat little bow. Like, that to me is the ultimate goal. Like, close down factory farms because there's no more need for them, because we're just producing much more plant-based meats now, and there's just no demand for the, you know, the animal agriculture. Like, that to me would be a much bigger win.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is about to be our longest YouTube video ever, actually, and I think for the sake of our darling editor, Sarah, I think we're...
You know, I do want to throw this out there. When the last time I was on YouTube, like, on my own accord, like, where I was recording, YouTube didn't allow videos longer than 10 minutes. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, no.
That was the last time.
Hope you guys hunkered down for this one.
we could not... You could not go beyond... I had to, like, set a timer or peek around the corner if I was, you know, on my little gorilla. What was it called? The gorilla? The arm?
Thing.
Yeah, the arm that holds your, back then, camera? It wasn't
gorilla
a phone.
Pod.
Gorilla pod?
Yes.
Yeah, gorilla pod, something like that. So, yeah, this conversation would not have been possible on YouTube 10 years ago. You couldn't go more than 10 minutes.
Well, for those of you who've made it this far, we appreciate you very much. Anyway, if you guys want to add to the discussion, leave it down in the comments below. We would love to hear what you guys think about this. You can also reach out to any one of us on Instagram, Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness, Vegan Proteins, and Muscles by Brussels. And we would just love to hear from you, because this is a discussion that should go beyond the three of us. And yeah, we care what you guys think. Thank you guys
for
tuning in.
Thanks.
And we will talk to you soon. Giacomo.
question number one. Vegan BBN says, Christine, says, why is your hair never groomed?
You know, I haven't given this one too much thought. I mean, if I'm being real, I don't give a shit. I probably should care more about my appearance and not look so bummy. But maybe it has to do with all of those years where I grew up in Guido culture. I never really was a Guido, but I did kind of assimilate. And so to like go out and socialize, everyone needed to have their hair done just right. 30 minutes to do your hair, like, come on. So nowadays, I think I kind of rebelled against that. Thanks for Dani, you know, being the Guido exorcist that she is. She got it right out of me. And that probably has something to do with why I do not groom my hair too frequently anymore.
All right, real question. I mean, we gave you guys like a recycled YouTube video podcast. So I guess we should give you a higher quality question than that. All right, Giacomo. I cannot read who this is from. Lavix SSC. Sorry, guys. Giacomo's handwriting. Not so great. But the question is, recommendation for shoulder exercises. Through planning, I found my shoulders are weak AF. Shoulder exercises for strength.
For strength. Okay, yeah, because, I mean, the thought here is, like, what is our goal? If our goal is purely aesthetics, then side lateral raises are the clear winner. And you'd be surprised how many people don't realize that, and they just think, well, let's just do more overhead pressing movements. So it really all depends on what your goals are. But once again, if we're talking purely physique and you really want to get those shoulder caps going, there's no better exercise than side lateral raises.
AKA the best exercise of all time.
Yes. And I think machine side lateral raises, specifically if you have one of those machines, that like the bent arm one, where you sit down and you can really isolate the side delts, I think that that's the most useful way to do it, because, you know, it's a concentration exercise.
Okay, but strength, Giacomo.
Yeah, but aesthetics. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so for strength, well, overhead pressing, I would say, is king. And most specifically, if we're going like for strength slash power, something like a push press, where it's an explosive movement and you're really, you know, the thing is with that kind of movement, you really want to make sure you're doing proper form. But I'd say a push press is a useful one. But I don't know that I would do only free weight. I would use some sort of back support, and I would supplement in with some seated dumbbell overhead pressing. And then, yeah, I mean, the side lateral raises aren't a bad idea, but also just rounding out and hitting the rear delts by way of maybe a face pull with a rope, or a reverse pec deck, for example. You don't really want to favor one delt too heavily. You kind of want to round them all out. But honestly, the side and the front, it's all three of them are good for other movements. I would do a mix of all. I got a question for you, Dani. What are the benefits of having big meals over snacking?
Oh, okay. So first of all, I think everybody needs to find what works for them. Some people, bigger, less frequent meals are going to work better. Some people, smaller, more frequent meals are going to work better. But I think when I think of this question, I think about having set meals versus like grazing, which if you remember, I remember when I was getting into fitness in the early 2000s, I remember the whole idea was basic. It was almost like never have a real meal. Just like eat tiny, tiny bits all throughout the day. That's how you rev up your metabolism, which absolutely turned out to be BS. But more than just not being true, I think it was actually pretty detrimental in a lot of ways, because when you are eating frequently, like basically when you never stop grazing, you are pretty much almost never going to get a decent enough dose of protein, which varies a little bit, but for most people it's about 25 grams-ish to spike muscle protein synthesis. You need about 25 grams of protein at a clip to spike muscle protein synthesis. And if you're eating 6, 8, 10, I even heard of people eating 12 meals a day, you're not going to get that. So you're not going to ever be spiking that muscle protein synthesis, which is like the main driver of hypertrophy, right? So when you're having bigger meals, you are doing that. And also the other benefit of bigger meals, in my opinion, is that when you're having bigger meals, you're going longer in between meals, right? So you actually have a chance to get hungry and remember what hunger feels like. And then you actually have a chance to eat enough to feel satisfied and full. So you know what that feels like. So I think the bigger meals actually help you stay in touch with your hunger and fullness cues that your body is giving you better. But the grazing, the main reason that I don't think grazing is such a great idea is for that muscle protein synthesis. And the other thing is, if you are never getting that 25 grams at a clip, but also if you're never getting any space between your meals, so you're just constantly intaking some protein, amino acids, your body becomes desensitized to a muscle protein synthesis spike. And this is one of the main reasons that I advise against putting branched chain amino acids in your gallon jug. You would think a constant stream of amino acids would be beneficial, right? Like, I'm always getting protein. My MPS is always elevated, right? But because it's always elevated means that you never get the spikes. And it's the spikes that cause the muscle building. So I think it's really, really important.
No, I think you covered it all on that one. Nice.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in for another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. If you have any questions or topics you'd like covered, feel free to reach out to us. We are on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and of course at veganproteins.com. We love hearing from you guys. Thanks again for tuning in. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you soon.